Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call on this Saturday, June 26, 2010, just 10 o'clock in the AM. I'll be taking you down to the top of the 11 o'clock hour for the next 60 minutes. A lot to do on this again busy Saturday. We'll begin though with the World Cup as the USA takes on Ghana today around about 2:30. Game, ESPN or ABC will do this little pregame thing at 2 o'clock. And when you think about it, you know, the USA has given you everything that they can give you as far as, you know, obviously being competitive, one, two, drama, and three, you know, the heart that they play with. There have been, you know, I've read a number of things where other teams really have admired how the USA has competed. Even one team thought that USA can, you know, USA could get all the way to the semifinals. Right now, of course, it's round 16. The first they've gone ever in the World Cup was a quarterfinal in 2002. And you think about it, and you look at their side of the draw. They are on the soft side of the draw. I mean, you have teams, the powerhouses like Brazil, Germany, Spain, Argentina, Mexico, on one side. USA is ranked the highest out of all the teams that are on their side currently. They wouldn't have to play anybody. They wouldn't have to play anybody tough, or I shouldn't say tough, but they wouldn't have to play any of those teams that ranked higher than them up until, you know, the semifinals. So it is conceivable that they can definitely get to the semifinals. And if they get that far, then, you know, who knows what happens. You know, you have France is out. Italy is out. So you have a couple of those teams that are big-time teams that are out. And, again, right now, this, you know, you have to love the way the team has played. I mean, and let's be honest with you. Their role should have been even easier if not for just some atrocious officiating. I mean, they have a goal taken away from them in that comeback against Slovenia. That should have been 3-2. You know, they survived. That was one of the worst calls that you'll ever see. You know, they tied England, which was heavily favored over them in that particular game. So, I mean, they provide you everything if you're a soccer fan in terms of drama, in terms of pure drama. They've given you. I mean, I think if the USA got to the quarterfinals, that, you know, it would be a pretty successful World Cup. You know, it has been since 1930 since they won their particular group. And again, right now they are in absolute position to make a run at a semifinal at the World Cup. Now, you know, let's keep this in perspective. They are not, by any stretch of imagination, you know, they're still the underdogs. I mean, in terms of when you look at the big picture, when you compare them to some of the other teams. I mean, Brazil, you know, watching Brazil play, it's like watching artists, you know, paint a picture. I mean, the skill level that Brazil has is such a high level that, I would love to see the USA play Brazil, just to watch Brazil. But, they're still one of the underdogs. But, you know, that's fine. Remember, the thing about the World Cup, the thing that makes the World Cup great great. It almost has a, I'd say, a tournament feel to it, even though it's not single elimination. You know, once you get to a certain point, you know, it becomes wide open. It definitely becomes wide open once you get to a certain point. I mean, you would certainly take like a team like Germany, Brazil, Spain, those type of teams. You certainly would take over the U.S., over the USA. But as long as this thing goes, the further the USA gets into this tournament, I think the better chance they have. They have to be confident right now, based on the way they're playing. They have a little magic to them. And they really haven't played one great game yet. Think about that. They haven't really played a complete game. They've had points where they've been good. They've gotten off to slow starts. I mean, if they could ever get off to a fast start, they'd be dangerous. So again, big match today against Ghana. They're a better team than Ghana. Ghana, of course, is a little short-handed. They're missing their best player. But again, Ghana is the long remaining South African team that's left. All the other teams have been put out. The Ivory Coast being the latest one, despite their win yesterday, they are out of the tournament. So, home field advantage could be an issue. With those fans and what have you. But realistically, USA should win that matchup. So I'll be definitely looking forward to it. Again, USA gets to the quarterfinals. Maybe they can get to the semifinals. After that, who knows what happens at the World Cup. Still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, we will go inside the NBA draft. Also, I'll tell you why the Zen Master will not retire, and we'll go inside some Kobe Bryant hated one-on-one. I'll tell you why it's gotten out of control. That's still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Welcome back to the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. I'm your host, of course, Cyril Quinn, again, taking you to the top of the 11 o'clock hour. The NBA draft take place on Thursday. Again, no big surprises, really no big surprises in terms of the draft order. John Wall, Evan Turner, the Nets going with favorites, passing up on DeMarcus Cousins. That draft, I'm telling you right now, I've been watching the draft now for about 15 years. I'm watching the draft, going back to about 93, maybe longer than that. I would say about 15, 18 years. I mean, my first recollection of one was back when you had the Penny Hardaway, Chris Webber, Sean Bradley. So that's about 1993, I'd say. Been watching the draft, year in and year out. That draft was like being, I would equate it to like getting ready for a movie. You're at the movie theater and you're waiting for the main event, so you're waiting for the movie and you're watching a bunch of boring previews. That's to me what that draft was like. There was no juice at that draft. It was boring. I mean, it was just nothing there. I mean, you had to listen to Stuart Scott give a million one irrelevant stats. You had to listen to Jay Billis say how great every player was. Jay Billis likes every player. And it's just, I don't know. I think a lot of this has to be attributed to this big free agent bonanza that we're coming up upon. That will, starting, I'll say, July 1st, next Thursday? Yeah, it's next Thursday, that, you know, it definitely took some away from the draft. I mean, make no mistake about it. It took some away from the draft. Again, that draft, everybody knows every move that was made was to help, you know, teams in terms of trades, that was to help teams get themselves in a position to where they can make a run at one of these big free agents. And that's all you thought about. And that's all, I mean, that was all the talk of the whole, basically the whole draft. So, I watched it. I was doing a couple other things during it. I wasn't fully engaged into it, but, you know, I watched it enough to be able to, you know, to get a sense of what these teams are trying to do. And the things that jumped out to me were, number one, as far as the teams that I got over, as far as I'm concerned, to me, the top of the list, you have to say that the Sacramento Kings, again, for the second straight year, have a big-time player fall into their lap. Last year, it was Tariq Evans with the number 5 pick. You had guys like James Harden going before him. This year, it's DeMarcus Cousins. Now, DeMarcus Cousins is a big baby. I mean, we all know this. We all know this. And he, you know, he's immature. You know, he had the 5 technical fouls. You know, Tim and Kyle Perry getting into it a lot over the course of the year. You know, Kyle Perry, you know, loves him. And, you know, he said, basically, Kyle Perry, you know, my wife treats him as a son. And all this other stuff that he brought into that Kyle Perry mentioned on the telecast. But you cannot pass up. Unless a guy has got a criminal record, you can't pass up on a dude who's 6'7", 6'11", 290 pounds, and who can produce in terms of at rebound and score, and has a good low post game, good footwork. You can't pass up on a guy like that. I mean, you got to work with him. If you're the New Jersey Nets, especially, I mean, if you're the Nets, to me, I mean, you have Brook Lopez. Can you imagine that front court, Cousins and Lopez, for the next 10 years in the Eastern Conference? And still the ability to sign a free agent, which they do have? I mean, again, I look at Derek Favors as a guy who, I mean, he would scare me as a Nets fan. He looks like a great athlete, but what else? I mean, what else? What else can he do offensively? I mean, I know his numbers are deceiving. He averaged 12 points a game, but again, the guards at Georgia Tech, you know, would struggle to pass gas, let alone basketball. Okay. So I give him that benefit of the doubt. But to me, you know, you don't have time, and I'll get to this in a minute. In the NBA, there's no 5-year rebuilding plan. You don't have to, like, it's gotten to you, and that's gotten out of control in terms of coaches being fired left and right. You don't have time to watch a kid develop for 3, 4, 5 years. You just don't. Those players, those players are not in the NBA. Those players are in Europe, to where they say, hey, we're going to draft a kid, let him sit for 2 or 3 years in Europe, play in Europe, and then he can come over and be ready to play for us. That doesn't happen when you draft a player to be on your roster right away in the NBA, especially the number 3 pick. And to me, I look at Derek Favors as a borderline project. Derek Favors right now is not ready to play at a high NBA level. Like, you know, truthfully, I don't even think Derek Favors, you know, is a starter on the New Jersey Nets. And it's a major problem to me if he starts on your team. So to me, I think that, you know, they will lament passing up on DeMarcus Cousins. They absolutely lament it. I mean, I can understand Minnesota not taking them because, you know, they have a lot of big people. Kevin Love. They have Kevin Love, Al Jefferson. But even Minnesota, I mean, Minnesota could have took him. I mean, Minnesota, you could never have enough quality big men, and they could have took him and probably packaged, you know, they're trying to move Al Jefferson anyway. Which, again, that's something I don't understand. I will address that a little bit later on with what's going on in Minnesota. But the Kings get a gift to get DeMarcus Cousins. I mean, this guy has 2010 written all over him. Again, and I don't feel he's on the level of Rasheed Wallace, Derek Coleman in terms of, no, I'm talking about as a player. I'm talking about in terms of just, you know, not having a work ethic and just being a, you know, a basket case mentally. I don't think he's that bad. I just think he's an immature 19-year-old who needs to, you know, if you put him in the right situation, in a stable situation, who will thrive. And I think with Sacramento, I like Westfall with coaching younger players. You know, Tyreek Evans is going to be a dynamic player. I think that's a good situation for him. And I think, the Nets, even with Avery Johnson, I mean, Avery Johnson can coach Tim Duncan, coach star players, Dirk Nowitzki. I mean, play with Tim Duncan, coach Dirk Nowitzki. I don't understand. Again, I don't understand why the Nets did not feel that they could work with this guy. Clearly, they didn't say, it was not a standpoint where it was where you didn't take him because of his talent. That wasn't the case. I mean, I'm telling you right now, it would not shock me, and I love John Wall. It wouldn't shock me in five years from now, we would say that DeMarcus Cousins was the best player in this draft. Wouldn't surprise me the least bit. At all. That's how good that I think he is. Another team that I think got over, and they continue to me to be a team that, you know, they're going to be somebody to watch out for, you know, in this upcoming NBA season. Oklahoma City, they get Cole Ulrich, get a future first round pick from the Clippers, and also pick up Morris Peterson. And again, that future first round pick from the Clippers will mean something because they're the Clippers. You know, it'll be a top 10, it'll be a top 5 pick, top 3 pick. Maybe the Clippers were smart enough to protect it as a top 3 pick. I wouldn't surprise me if they didn't protect that pick because that's what the Clippers do. Morris Peterson, a veteran shooter that can make shots. Cole Ulrich, you know, limited offensively, but again, big body that can bang and rebound. You need player of those against the Los Angeles Lakers. They got two other big players, one 7-footer from Germany who is not quite ready to play, but they'll have him, you know, for in a couple of years, and a Ryan Reed, who's a banger, power forward. So, again, Oklahoma City shows you why they are one of the best young teams in the sport and why their general manager is becoming one of the, you know, best young general managers in the sport. They just continue to make the right moves, through the draft, through trades, and they're definitely going to be a force to watch in this upcoming season. In this upcoming season, as we as we head into 2010-2011, there's one thing I want to mention before I get back to the draft. John Calipari. Man, I guess this is a part of draft because, I mean, John Calipari had 5 players drafted, of course, from Kentucky that he coached this year. He comes up, and again, I have no problem with his excitement, bouncing from table to table. You know, people say he's looking like a proud father. That's fine. You know, he obviously loves his players, and they were a tightly close-knit group. But if you're John Calipari, you cannot come up there and say that this is the greatest moment in Kentucky basketball history. You know, you can't say that. You know, Kentucky won 7 national championships as a program. They have more wins than any college team, college basketball team in the history of the sport. okay? Them having you, I mean, just the fact that you're coaching them, and all of a sudden you had five players get drafted. I mean, it wouldn't even rank. I mean, it's a good day in Kentucky for Kentucky basketball, but it's not even close to a national championship. Come on, John. Are you kidding me? The greatest day in Kentucky basketball history. I mean, Rick Pitino had to be somewhere laughing. That's all it is, laughing. I mean, you gotta be kidding me. I mean, that's a slap in his face, considering that the fact that you had five first round picks and you couldn't win, and you couldn't even get to the Final Four. I mean, you should have won a national championship. You had five first round picks and couldn't get to the Final Four. So I'm a little annoyed by that. And all John was a little bit over the top with that comment. A little bit over the top. And, of course, you look at a team that really got over, the Wizards. I mean, let's be honest. They got probably arguably the best player in the draft. No question he should have been number one in John Wall. Listen, I think this guy is cut out in the same mold as Derrick Rose, Deron Williams, Chris Paul. To me, the only concern I would have with him is the fact that you still have, you know, Gilbert Arenas there. And if I were the Wizards, this is how I would handle the Gilbert Arenas situation. I pull Gilbert Arenas in my office and say, look, number one, I'm just going to come out and just get out in the open. We are trying to move you. Okay, I'll just be honest with him. Don't cut no corners. Don't blow any smoke. We're trying to move you. Okay. Now, this is John Wall's team. He's the future. He's the present, the future, and what have you. Help be a mentor out to him and help him make that transition smoother. Doesn't mean that you're going to be reduced to taking only 8 or 9 shots a game. But what it means is you are not going to have the ball in your hands. You're not going to dominate the basketball. And if you have a problem with that, you will sit the bench. It's just that simple. And I'll explain to Gilbert, hey, you have an opportunity to make yourself a more tradable commodity if you go out there and show the world that you've changed your stripes. Go out there, be a leader, be a mentor, play well, play within our system, and then you will be easier to move. So we can move you to a team to where, you know, you can go and try to be the man again. That's why I would tell Gilbert Arenas. I mean, that's why I would tell him flat out. I mean, cut through all the nonsense and just get right to it. Because in order for John Wall to be successful, Gilbert Arenas, you can't have anything out of any smidge of trouble out of Gilbert Arenas. I'm not even talking about off the court. I ain't even talking about the guns. I'm not even talking about that. I'm just talking about in terms of chemistry. You know, he's the number one pick. There's going to be a lot of pressure on him because he's already considered to be the savior of the franchise. And John Wall is the first major piece into this post, you know, Gilbert Arenas, it's a new beginning for the Washington Wizards. I mean, you have no Jameson, you have no Brendan Haywood, you have no Caron Butler. They're trying to make this transgression, transition into being a different type franchise. You know, the past is over. they're going in another direction, and John Wall is the leader of that. And again, you cannot have Gilbert Arenas, you know, thinking that he's the guy on this team, because he's not. You want John Wall dominating the ball, because John Wall, again, a legit 6'4", excellent passer, unselfish, listen, I guarantee you, if John Wall did not go to Kentucky, they would not have 5 first-round picks. Those guys like Daniel Orton, you know, Eric Bledsoe, I'm not so sure those guys are first-round picks without John Wall. Now, Cousins, Patrick Patterson, probably so. But those other two players, no. Those other two players would have been, you know, early to mid-second round picks. I mean, Daniel Orton averaged 3 points a game last year. But because of the profile of John Wall, you know, that, you know, got Kentucky that much more popular. Plus, they all came in together as this, you know, highly talented freshman class. But I tell Gilbert Arenas, hey, you know, it's a new day. I mean, that, you know, you've had your chance, didn't work out. We're going in this direction, and you get with the program, or you just hit the bench. Because trying to move him right now with roughly about $80 million on his contract, good luck. Good luck trying to move him right now. Though it's not impossible, because all it takes is one dummy. All it takes is one dummy to go out there and take all that money and take the baggage of Gilbert Arenas. But very highly unlikely right now. Now, it could change as the free agent process plays itself out. But as of right now, Gilbert Arenas is going to be a Washington Wizard. Still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. I will give you, we have a lot of NBA. I will give you the Eastern and Western Conference finalists. And also, I will tell you why Phil Jackson is not retiring. That is still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. About 28 minutes after the 10 o'clock hour, I'll be right back. Welcome back to the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Of course, I'm your host, Cyril Quinn. We're almost at 10:30, almost 30 minutes after the 10 o'clock hour, just halfway through the program. Of course, we'll take you to the top of the 11 o'clock hour. And, you know, despite the fact that free agency has not commenced yet, you can already see, you know, I can already give you the teams that are going to be the dominant teams going into next season. You know, and to me, and I'm looking at the Eastern Conference, we are headed towards a Chicago Bulls, Miami Heat, Eastern Conference final. The Heat have put themselves in a position to where their coach put themselves in a position to where they can add 3 max players, sign Dwayne Wade to the max, and get 2 other players. On top of that, right now, they only have 3 players under contract. They have Dwayne Wade, they have Mario Chalmers, and Michael Beasley. They are actively trying to move Michael Beasley. If they're able to move Beasley, it would guarantee them that they can have Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, LeBron James, which is not going to happen with LeBron, or Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, Joe Johnson, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, Amari Stoudemire, any combination of that, they are more likely going to be able to add. Chicago Bulls, on the other hand, you know, they get rid of Kirk Heinrich and their pick to the Washington Wizards, which is, I believe, the 17th pick. They clear up $9 million in cap space, which now is going to allow them to go after two max contract players. So, meaning, you know, they can get LeBron James and another player. So they can go out there, and get LeBron James and Chris Bosh to go alongside with Derrick Rose and Joakim Noah. So to me, right now, as far as LeBron James goes, Chicago is the leader in the clubhouse. I mean, let's be honest about it. They're the leader in the clubhouse. Because they have, you know, now with this, to me, this move that they've made might have clinched them getting LeBron James. I mean, where else is he going? I mean, if you think about it. What, like, in terms of winning, Chicago is one of the major markets. I mean, where else, if you're LeBron James? Again, the Miami thing is not going to happen because he had too much ego in him to go play with Dwayne Wade Miami. I mean, that would be the best situation in terms of winning. But now that I think about it, I mean, this Chicago situation for him might be even the best because, you know, he can win, he can be the guy on the team, and again, you have marketing opportunities for him. So there's not no, I mean, you have that combination. No other team probably has that kind of, that. No other team has that better that combination. Miami, he's not gonna be the guy. Miami isn't as marketable as say Chicago is. And it seems to me that Chris Bosh, wherever LeBron goes, that's where Chris Bosh is gonna go. That's a pretty safe bet. So, again, I think there's no question. To me, you're looking at Bulls, Heat in the finals. In the Western Conference, I would say Lakers and Oklahoma City. I mean, there's no other team that jumps out in the Western Conference that can pose a serious threat to the Los Angeles Lakers right now other than Oklahoma City. San Antonio's old. Phoenix, to me, looks like they had the one great year, but, you know, Nash is not getting any younger. Portland's always injured. Utah's just not good enough. Dallas is not good. Who knows? Dallas could be, once he leaves, they could be in a rebuilding mode. Denver is just, you don't trust them at all. Couple of things that came out of the draft in terms of general managers. Rob Thorne, sources say, is going to step down as general manager of New Jersey Nets, which puts them in a tough spot. I mean, he's going to step down. I mean, I think he's going to stay with them through free agency. But you talk about the timing not being the greatest. That is, you can't like that if you're a New Jersey Nets fan. And Kevin Pritchard fired on the night of the draft by Paul Adams of the Portland Trail Blazers. Now, what sense does this make? Absolutely none. I mean, Kevin Pritchard is one of the top general managers in the sport. He's taken that Portland team, which when he got there was in turmoil with all the attitudes and all the arrest and just the whole culture of Portland Trailblazers basketball, which is in a bad state. I mean, the fans were annoyed. You know, the fans were absolutely annoyed with the team at that standpoint. He changed that culture and turned Portland into a playoff team and has them in a position to where they can make moves for free agency through pieces that they can do through possible trades. I mean, I don't understand the move. And they fired him an hour before the draft. So, I give him a credit for being a class act. I mean, they did Paul and allowed him to work the draft. But if I'm Kevin Pritchard and I get fired an hour before the draft, I'm saying, you know what? You do this. You draft this player. You make a trade. Bye. I'm going. I mean, I wouldn't give Portland. I mean, I wouldn't give him any more of my time after, you know, after you're going to fire me before the draft. You know, based on what? Based on the fact that I've accumulated as much young talent as any team in the NBA. You know, it's not Kevin Pritchard's fault that Greg Oden cannot stay happy. And again, it says that he's fallen out of favor with Paul Allen. I want to know how has he fallen out of favor with Paul Allen. I mean, still nothing, no definitive reason has came out to why this took place. Again, I don't understand it. It's one of those things that might come out, you know, in the next couple of days or whatever, but to me, it just didn't make much sense. It didn't make sense at all, so, you know, in my opinion. But he's out as Portland's general manager, and we'll see what direction they're headed in. To me, it's not a good day if you're a Portland Trailblazers fan that Kevin Pritchard is not your general manager. The guy is one of the top five or six general GMs in the NBA without question. So, not a good move by the Trailblazers. Phil Jackson, of course, you know, hit it towards retirement earlier this week. The thing you gotta realize with Phil Jackson is, you gotta pay attention to what he says, really carefully pay attention to what he says. You know, when he makes a statement, you know, I'm leaning towards retirement, but I haven't made up my mind yet. That is, let me translate that. That means the Lakers need to step up and, you know, not get too crazy with this pay cut. I'll take a pay cut, but I'm not taking a $5 or $6 million pay cut. I'll take a $2 or $3 million pay cut, but I'm not, you know, I mean, home playoff games, we had the cool amount of home playoff games, just two below the minimum. Well, really only one below the minimum. They played two below the minimum, considering the fact that they swept. They had a bunch of playoff games. Put to you that way, they had four below the minimum because Oklahoma City they played two when they could have played four. They could have played four. Utah they only played two when they could have played four. Phoenix they played three when they could have played four. So, I mean, basically, you know, they had a bunch of home playoff games, which of course was sold out to the brim. They, you know, he wins the last championship, his 11th. Yeah, the guy has more championships than fingers. And you can't ask that guy. You can't ask a guy who's won 11 championships to take a significant pay cut. I understand this, that California, as a state, is in bad shape. I mean, they're taking furloughs. They're asking employees to take furloughs left and right. But you know, it's hard to ask a guy to take a pay cut when he's watched you give Kobe Bryant, you know, a $90 million extension, go over to Leslie Tex and sign, you know, Lamar Odom, get Ron Artest. And again, the Los Angeles Lakers are the most valuable franchise in the NBA. They sell out on the road in terms of merchandise. Kobe Bryant has number one jersey. I mean, Los Angeles Lakers are a cash cow. So, don't think that Phil Jackson is not aware of this, because he is. So, again, there's no way you could have that guy to take a pay cut that's, you know, that significant to where it's only going to be, to where he's only making $5-6 million a year. It's not going to happen. But do I think Phil Jackson's retiring? No. I think Phil Jackson is kind of posturing, trying to use this as a bargaining chip for the threat of retirement. He knows how much Kobe Bryant loves him, and he understands that, you know, Lakers want to do what they have to do to keep Kobe Bryant happy and try to go for another chance at a three-peat. Now, with all that said, as a longtime Laker fan, you know, they can win a championship without Phil Jackson. I mean, Byron Scott could come here and win a championship. You know, Jeff Van Gundy is capable. I mean, they can win a championship without Phil Jackson. I think I've been on the Phil Jackson bandwagon probably longer than anybody in regards to him as being a great, great coach. You know, him being able to take good teams and make them great. Much harder to take a horrible team and make it good than it is to take a good team and make it great. If nobody in the history of sports has done that, you know, maybe Scottie Bowman is up there, but nobody has done that better than Phil Jackson in sports, not just in the NBA, in sports. So again, for me, it's hard to ask that guy, again, with 11 championships, to take a significant pay cut. I mean, think about it. We are, most of us get paid based on our job performance, and that's a part of our compensation. If you are performing better than anybody, so doing what you do better than anybody else on the, you know, in the country or in the world, would you take a pay cut? Let that run through your mind for a couple of seconds. Think about that. You know, it doesn't make any sense. So we'll see what happens with that. Expecting to make a decision soon, within the next couple of days. Again, I think if he was gonna come out and thought I retired, that he would have did it, and he would have said, you know, this week he would just say, hey, I'm done. And that would have been that. I don't think he's going to retire. Lakers have given permission. Assistant coach, top assistant, Brian Shaw, permission to talk with Cleveland. So we'll see how that plays itself out. And you didn't think that I was going to go through this whole show. You know, we missed last week, unfortunately, without talking about, without getting to some Lakers. I mean, come on now. I will spare you the championship talk. I understand Boston fans are still in mourning over championship number 16 for the Los Angeles Lakers. Banner 16, that is, to tweak the Boston fans a bit. But ever since the Lakers won the championship, you know, roughly 9 days ago, there's been this animosity geared towards Kobe Bryant that, to me, this is by the old guard of the media. I'm talking the Mike Lupicas of the world, Bob Ryans, Michael Wilbons, Tony Kornheiser, those guys. I'll call their names because that's who, you know, those are the guys who have been, you know, anti-Kobe Bryant. You know, the bottom line is, right now, Kobe Bryant is one of the top 6 or 7 players that ever played this game, right now, ever. You know, the only guys whose resumes are as complete as Bryant's is, you got to go Bill Russell, you got to look at Michael Jordan, of course, you know, Wilt Chamberlain, just based on what he did statistically, also played on two of the greatest champion teams of all time when he won, you know, winning his 2 championships. You know, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And you'd be hard-pressed to say anybody else. I mean, you can argue Magic. You can debate Magic, but I think he's even, you know, superseded Magic as the greatest Laker of all time. So really, only four or five players have better. I mean, Kobe Bryant right now, I think, is one of the top 5 players of all time. Right now, top 5. And when it's said and done, then I also include, and I left him out, Tim Duncan. Very underrated. Tim, you have to include Tim Duncan. I mean, I definitely can debate him for what he's done. You know, all-around player, offensively, defensively, winning for 4 championships. He certainly is certainly debatable with that, but Bryant, you know, has now more championships than Tim Duncan. So, you know, I think that there, what I think has happened is, I think that the old guard is used to, you know, now the argument is becoming weaker and weaker as Kobe Bryant wins more championships. You know, 2 years ago it was, you know, he can't win without Shaq, he's selfish, he, you know, he'll never win another championship, and so on and so on. Who cares about 81 points? Who cares if he leads the league in scoring, you know, every year leads the league in scoring? He's not a leader. Okay, so he wins the championship last year. Minus Shaq. Then it was, no, he's still not as good as Magic. You know, Magic has five. He's still not as great as Laker, Kareem, and blah, blah, blah. So now he has five championships. So, again, that argument is getting weaker and weaker. And let me tell you something. This is coming from somebody who is as big of a Magic Johnson fan as you'll ever find. Magic Johnson is my favorite player of all time. He's still my favorite player of all time, despite the fact that, you know, I'm a huge Kobe Bryant fan. But then Magic Johnson is Magic Johnson as far as being my favorite player. But Kobe Bryant is a better all-around player. And then the thing that separates Kobe Bryant from Magic Johnson is defensively. Kobe Bryant has been all defense first team 8 times, been on the all defensive team, second team twice. You know, Magic Johnson never made an all defense. It was never all defense in his career. He was, you know, a decent team defensive player as far as playing the passing lanes. And the idea that Kobe Bryant can never be as good as Magic based on the fact that Magic Johnson helped save basketball along with Larry Bird is the dumbest argument I've ever heard in my life. That has nothing to do with skill set and accomplishments. Because if that were the case, then Magic Johnson is the best player of all time and Larry Bird is the second best player of all time. Okay, forget about Jordan, forget about Bill Russell. No, that makes no sense. Now, is Kobe Bryant Michael Jordan? No, he's not Michael Jordan. And he's probably more likely he will never be Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan dominated the NBA Finals. That's the difference. He dominated the NBA Finals. Kobe Bryant has not been dominant in the NBA Finals. He's been pretty good. He hasn't been dominant over the course of his career in the NBA Finals. But again, Michael Jordan is arguably the greatest player of all time, and Bryant does deserve to be in the conversation. I know that. But if you're a fan of basketball, to me, what is not to like about his game? Again, I think people get too caught up in the personality. You know, you're still ticked off about Eagle Colorado, get over it. If you're still ticked off about Kobe and Shaq thing, get over it. It was half of it. Most, to me, that was more Shaq's fault anyway. Just as much, if not more, in terms of Shaquille O'Neal. He doesn't get off, you know, he doesn't get off unscathed in terms of what happened with that. But we're just talking basketball. He has no weaknesses in his game. He's a guy who goes up there, plays hard every night, brings it every night. And again, you're talking about one of the most talented, one of the most driven players to ever play this game, who constantly is looking to get better. He's a guy who had won after four championships, calls Akeem Olajuwon and says, "Hey, I want to become a better post-up player. So, you know, to help me in terms of developing my footwork, becoming better in the post." And I mean, that's Kobe Bryant. And the scary thing, if you're the rest of the NBA is, he can still get better. You know, when he's, you know, part of the reason why what made Jordan so great was because Jordan got to a level to where he was able to not work as hard to get shots. Kobe Bryant takes some of the hardest shots in the NBA. You know, when you have Paul Gasol, when you have LeBron, when you have as much talent around you as Kobe Bryant does, you should not have to work as hard as he does to get shots off and to take shots. When he understands how to completely use his teammates to get easier shots, then it's going to be, I mean, this is not even, it's really not going to be fair at that point. It's not going to be fair. So to me, that's the next step, man. I thought it was at a, he was at a point at an age in his career where he couldn't get any better. Well, you know what? He can get better. So again, he's the greatest looker of all time. And you don't believe me? I mean, go ask Jerry West. He's come out of Jerry West now. Jerry West said that, you know, he left Magic Johnson, but there's never been a talent that's coming to that organization like Kobe Bryant. And he included himself in that. Remember, Jerry West was an all-time great as well. And this whole idea where he couldn't, you know, he won three, he couldn't, he's only won two championships being the best player and all that. Listen, Magic Johnson did not win one championship without Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, okay? Magic Johnson had a ton of more talent alongside him, more talent than Kobe Bryant has ever had. I'm talking about Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who, by the way, is better than Shaquille O'Neal. James Worthy, Byron Scott, you know, got Jamal Wilkes, Bob McAdoo, Michael Thompson. I mean, come on. Like, the talent level that Magic, the player Norm Nixon. I mean, Kobe Bryant right now, Gasol possibly could be a Hall of Famer. Other than that, Shaquille O'Neal, definitely, obviously an all-time great. But other than that, he's played with, Kobe Bryant's played with role players, very good role players at that. The Derek Fishers, Robert Woods of the world, Rick Foxes, those guys. Now he's got Ron Artest, who is not a Hall of Fame player, but is still an above average player, also a caliber player, but not a Hall of Famer. Still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, final segment time. We'll get into some baseball. A lot going on in baseball this week. It was a busy week of baseball. I will tell you why Barry Bonds' record will be safe for a long, long time. We'll talk about that. That and what's going on in down in South Florida, that's still to come on the final segment, this final segment of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Welcome back. 53 minutes after the 10 o'clock hour. Coming up on the 11 o'clock hour. I'll take you to the top of the 11 o'clock hour. Busy week in baseball. it was a busy night. Before I even get to Bobby Valentine, Carl Zambrano, to think that they signed this guy to a 5-year, $91 million contract. I mean, you're talking about a bad contract right now. That guy, number one, he's been awful this year. I mean, he's 3-7. He got kicked, he got put out of the starting, he got taken out of rotation, was in the bullpen. They brought him back. And last night, he gives up. Last night, he gave up a couple of hard-hit balls that he thought should have been fielded. Complaining to the teammates about not diving for the balls. Those balls were well hit, were sharp, sharply hit singles. So I don't think those balls could have been gotten to. But obviously he thought different. Goes berserk, and I mean berserk in the dugout. Goes at Derek Lee, who is not a guy you want to play with. I mean Derek Lee is about 6'5", 240 pounds. I don't know if Zimbardo would have really won a piece of Derek Lee. I mean, he was doing a whole bunch of yelling. I didn't see him physically charging at Lee. So from that standpoint, I'm not so sure that he really wanted any part of a Derek Lee. But just goes berserk. Flips over a Gatorade canister with using every word in the using every curse word in the book. yelling. He went, looked like, he had that Exodus in him. He just went nuts. And when Lupa, listen, when Lupa Nella says that you're over the top, then you really lost it. So Lupa Nella has been famous going crazy towards umpires when he's been kicked out of games. So obviously he will be on the trading block. So you can add his name to that list of quality pitchers that will be on the trading block. Will I want him on my team? Absolutely not. I mean, he's too volatile. It does not take a lot to set him off. Mentally, he has a million-dollar arm but a 10-cent head. Also, you had Edwin Jackson from Arizona become the latest pitcher to throw a no-hitter. This one was kind of unique as he walked 8 people through 149 pitches, which, I mean, they must feel like he has a rubber arm, 149 pitches. I mean, that's going back to the days of Bob Gibson and Sandy Koufax. So, again, he walked seven players. He walked, I believe, 7 in the first 3 innings, but was still able to get by and without giving up a hit. He does it again. It had to be sweet for him that he does it against a team that got rid of him in terms of the devil, in terms of the Tampa Bay Rays. He's not had a good year. He's only 5-6. But again, he joins the likes of Roy Halladay, Ubaldo Jimenez, and Dallas Braden as for throwing no hitters. Of course, Halladay. Holiday and him and us through perfect games. So again, this year has been, just been a year to pitch it. I mean, you saw almost dual no hitters last week, or might been a couple of weeks ago when Chicago, when you had Ted Lilly and I forgot who was pitching for the White Sox. I don't think it was Martin Burley. It might have been John Danks. It was either John Danks or Gavin Floyd, one of those guys from the White Sox that, they almost had dual no-hitters. So, continues to be the year of the pitcher as far as baseball goes. It looks like Bobby Valentine is going to be the next manager at the Florida Marlins. I think it's a great move. If they were to get Valentine, he's a very good manager. Did a good job in his time with the New York Mets. I don't think he should have been fired. I don't think he should have been fired in place for, definitely not in place for Art Howe at that. Valentine, again, that is a team that is very dangerous. They have pretty good starting pitchers. We know that they can hit, or they have the potential to be a better offensive team. They really haven't hit as well as they are capable of hitting. But, you give them Freddy Gonzalez, bring in Valentine. I think Valentine will put them in the mix as far as not only being a wild card, but trying to win that division. They should not be under 500. They have too much talent for that. So keep your eyes on the Florida Marlins in the next couple of weeks, as I expect Valentine to be named the manager within the next week or so. Also, interleague play comes to an end this week. Dodgers-Yankees. Yankees won a great game last night, 2-1. Mariano Rivera strikes out Man Ramirez in a big spot. Joe Torre Joe Torre playing, managing his old team. So keep your eyes on that series as well. And lastly, Alex Rodriguez hit a home run last night. But for his career, Alex Rodriguez has 593 home runs. He only has 10 home runs this year. He's still 148 home runs shy of Barry Bonds' record, 762. And he's about 34 years old. He's going to have to average about 25 home runs for the next 6 years. I'm giving them 20 more home runs for the rest of the season. So, I don't think Alex Rodriguez is going to get to that record the way it's looking. And if Alex Rodriguez doesn't get to it, the next guy in line would be, say, Albert Pujols, who only has 381, doesn't even have 400 home runs for his career. So that record, that record could stand for a long, long time if A-Rod doesn't get to it. And again, He only has 10 home runs, and we're basically in July. So I think those years of A-Rod counting out 35 to 40 to 50 home runs could be over. Still has 51 RBIs, but he really has had a power shortage this year. Enjoy your week. Enjoy the baseball. Enjoy the World Cup. USA versus Ghana, King 30. You have to check it out. I will see you next week. So long. Have a great week.